This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, it's Monday, OG, and we're sitting here in the basement. Well, you're in the basement. I'm in Andy Hill's basement, actually, in Detroit. But
you're a vagabond.
Yeah, we're in separate basements, but
it's very close to your old basement.
It is. It's like half a mile away.
Did you drive past and see if they did anything?
I did not. Those losers did anything to my house?
Yeah.
I did not. However, you know what I did think today, though? I thought about what a great day it would be to do another shout out to our troops, keeping us safe here. As we hear about world events continuing, OG, and just, oh man. So
never know.
Big shout out. Raise our cup of coffee to the men and women serving in our U.S. military on behalf of the men and women of Navy Federal and the people making the podcast donuts here in the basement. Let's all go stack some Benjamins.
Describe your perfect date.
I'd have to say April 25th. Because it's not too hot, not too cold. All you need is a light jacket.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and how are your nails looking today? If your claw-like protrusions could use a buff, great news, because it's National Mani-Pedi Day. Mani-Pedis are definitely part of a happy marriage, and to help you in your relationship, we welcome authors of The 80-80 Marriage, Nate and Kaylee Klimp. In headlines, mani-pedis aren't the only great investment. How about a safe one that's creeping up towards a 10% return? We'll share that and our TikTok Minute. And we'll throw out the Haven Lifeline to Alex with a question about the ingredients of an index fund. And finally, I'll come at you with my nail biter of a trivia. And now, two guys who have their talons looking freshy fresh every day of the week, it's Joe and O-J-J-J-J-G.
It is Monday, and I am Joe Salcy, High Average Joe Money on Twitter, and you are here celebrating the beginning of another week with us, and we're so happy that you're here. And here with his freshly painted talons, it's Mr. OG.
I couldn't understand if he said talons or talents. And
does it have to be either or? It could be
well,
both.
Maybe you both.
Got your talent and your talons freshly painted. Have you done the Manny Petty thing before?
No. No.
I have never done one either. I've heard from lots of men, though, that it's very relaxing. It's a good thing. I have had cats that...
Everybody likes a little hand job.
Yeah, or feet. But the thing that drives me crazy is when... well, have you ever had a cat give themselves a mani-pedi all over your sofa?
It's not the same thing.
No, not good. We got a great show today. We're going to talk about marriage. And actually, you know what? Even if you are single... Just in any relationship, I think that the message is clear that if you live in an 80-20 or a 50-50 relationship, not the same. The Klimps.
What the heck is an 80-20 relationship?
80-20 is like the 1950s, where traditionally he would come home from work and, you know, you don't tell him about your problems. It's
plop on the couch. Food must be prepared. That thing that went around a couple years ago, like, in order to make your man happy, please don't bother him with your trivial problems.
Exactly. Yes.
Ensure the home is neat and tidy and dinner is prepared when he walks in. Should have his favorite beverage ready, like that sort of stuff. Okay.
Well, but then we went to the 50-50 relationship, right? In the 1970s. And the clumps don't think that that's a good idea either. We'll talk about that, but we got a great headline first. But even before that, this episode sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. It's Military Appreciation Month, and I want to share appreciation for one of our stackers I met in Cleveland for the second time. Keith just drove his car off the road. But Keith, a proud military member, I enjoyed seeing Keith. And you know what? Eric was there too, who was in the Marines, but both of these fine gentlemen served our country that I met in Cleveland. I want to give a shout out to them. And this Military Appreciation Month, Navy Federal Credit Union wants to celebrate not just Keith and Eric, but all their members who go above and beyond. Navy Federal offers member-only exclusive rates, discounts, and tools to empower their members and help them reach their goals. They offer 24/7 help from their U.S.-based member service centers. They offer resources like Best Cities After Service to help veterans transition to civilian life and Best Careers for Military Spouses to support our military families. All branches of the military, veterans, DOD employees, and their families are eligible for Navy Federal membership. Visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate this month, and you'll see all of our Military Appreciation Month offers and other Navy Federal offers. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. All right, OG and I got the coffee ready. We got a great headline, so let's get the party started.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's Headlines.
Our headline today comes to us from The Wall Street Journal, and it's written by Dion Rebuan. The safe investment that will soon yield almost 10%. You sent this to me, OG, and I went, safe and 10%? Historically, you put safe and 10% in a sentence, the SEC is knocking on a door going, you can't market that way. But this isn't marketing. There's no such thing as a free lunch in finance, except maybe this: the interest rate on inflation-adjusted U.S. savings bonds will approach 10%. Beginning in May, the U.S. Treasury Series I bonds will offer annual interest payments of 9.6% based on the bond's latest inflation rate calculation, which is tied to March's consumer price index.
Pretty high.
Here's the thing, though. We think that that's great, that that's fantastic. There is nothing great about I bonds paying 9.6% OG, because all the other stuff that comes with that, there's a reason why it's safe and it's paying that. And this should raise a red flag, right? That if you're not keeping up with inflation now, you are losing money. You are losing buying power. And if the I bond, which measures inflation, is paying you 9.6, Houston got a problem.
Well, remember it's also short term. So this is an adjustable number that's going to change every 6 months. It changes in May and November. It's a reflection of what's happening right this nanosecond. I don't think that you can put your 10 grand in here and expect that you're going to get 9.5% every year from here on out. That doesn't check. But even let's just assume that inflation is a little bit higher. What are the dominoes that happen with inflation kind of logically? Well, interest rates have to go up to kind of get close, right? I mean, we were talking the other day about, my wife and I were talking about how inflation's really high. They've raised interest rates and Ally is still hanging out at 0.5% on their savings. Like they're really quick to lower it, you know, like, oh, interest rates change, so we got to lower our rate. but they're a little slow on moving it up.
Which is actually pretty wild because Ally Bank has always been among the top banks in terms of raising. So it's not Ally. It's all the banks are doing what gas stations, they're learning from gas stations, right? Gas stations raise the cost very quickly and then lower them slowly over time. Lowering
slowly. Sure. So eventually you'd expect that to happen, right? If inflation was higher, you'd expect interest rates to be higher. You'd expect your savings account rate to be higher. If inflation were to settle out at, instead of being 2.5%, it settles out at 4 moving forward, then all of the other financial instruments kind of downwind of that also have to make a change over time to account for that. You know, the 10-year treasury, which is kind of largely considered the risk-free rate, you're talking about, you know, there's no such thing as a free lunch or guaranteed in 10%. Well, that's over a short period of time, so it's not going to be 10% forever. But the risk-free rate that people use kind of in their back of their minds are the 10-year treasury. Right now, it's at 2 and some change. So if that number were a little bit higher, then that also means that the other yields on other financial instruments would have to offset that as time goes on as well. So if you look over time, the only place that you can have money that outpaces inflation consistently is in stocks. It's the only thing that provides the purchasing power or the pricing power to offset the negative effects of inflation. Because what is inflation? Inflation is just prices being more than they were a period of time before, right? Razor blades or beer cans or gasoline or whatever it is you're buying. So if those things are getting more expensive relative to your income, then the only place that you can go to benefit from that is by being an owner of the things that are raising their prices. So if you're looking at, you know, outpacing inflation, if you're looking at like, where do I put money if inflation were to remain high for a long time, you know, the only logical place is in equities because fixed income is not going to do it. I mean, I-bonds are doing it for a short period of time for a really small dollar amount. You know, the most you can put in is $10,000 a year. So that's going to take a long time to accumulate enough money in I-bonds to offset it from a yeah. portfolio standpoint. Yeah. Even if you've got a family and kids and all that stuff, you can buy stuff for. So that's a small component of it. Your cash reserve has to stay in cash. And I know you're getting your butt kicked on what we just talked about, inflation and interest rates are not doing great. But that provides you the liquidity and the flexibility that you need in case anything goes wrong. The rest of your money has to be in the ownership of these great companies that are also increasing their prices. So you're part of the problem, but you're also part of the solution. So, you know, you have to be an owner there. And we're seeing it even in fixed income, because as interest rates go up, what happens to prices of bonds? They go
falling.
Down.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're like, well, I thought bonds were the safe thing. It's like, I don't know.
Maybe not.
I don't know.
I-bonds also offer tax benefits. A lot of people don't know this. Holders can choose to defer declaring I-bond interest until maturity or redemption. That income may be tax exempt for lower middle income families that use the bond to pay for college tuition. But still, OG, if you're a long way out, I agree with you. The same thing that's making I-bonds go up is the same reason why you want to own companies. It's the same trigger.
Yep. And if you can, if you're able to put $10,000 in these I-bonds, I mean, make it happen. Yeah, if you can do it, your spouse can do it, your kids can do it. You know, I mean, if you've got the money, this is the time to do that.
The National Council on Aging has a fantastic piece written by Michael Snowden, certified financial planner, who talks about the different types of risk out there. And I think that when people think about risk, OG, they think about just market risk. But when you're looking at I-bonds right now versus the money that's sitting in Ally earning zero, you have a different type of risk. When you talk about interest rates going up and the value bonds going down, like those are different types of risk. And I want to go through some of these. You're talking specifically there about interest rate risk. Interest rate risk causing a lot of problems. In fact, there was a tweet that was a pretty big deal over the weekend. Last weekend from Nassim Taleb, who says that the NFT thingy, he calls it the NFT thingy, is starting to burst. All you need is higher interest rates for things that make no sense to start making no sense. Because when you've got low cost money, you can go buy with leverage stuff that doesn't make a lot of sense. He thinks NFTs are in a world of hurt now with interest rates going up.
It's that, or it's something even less controversial, like the second homes or the extra vacations, or just any sorts of things that are easy to finance or easy to, you know, like, oh, who cares? Interest rates on that are pretty low. I can afford this thing. I'm hearing stories from realtors of people who were approved for $500,000 6 weeks ago that are now approved for $400,000 because interest rates have gone up so much. So that's going to have some impact at the initial house purchase, but then also in the secondary market. So, or second home market, I should say, not secondary. Anything that required financing or had the option of financing. And if you were over levered or are over levered, and that's kind of where you are right now, kind of start to tighten.
Yeah, those adjustable rate loans now looking pretty ugly for people. Purchasing power, which is inflation risk, he talks about. Of course, that's been the whole topic of this conversation. Reinvestment rate risk is something people don't think about. It's when if you're investing in bonds and you're getting a certain interest rate and then interest rates go down, you actually receive a lower dividend payment on the reinvested stuff. So there's a risk of automatically reinvesting your money. Not a reason not to do it, but something to think about. Currency risk, which is exchange rate risk. Business risk, if you have just a specific business that you're investing in versus investing in the index and a lot of different things, you have that one. A financial risk, which is directly related to the amount of debt that companies have. There becomes some financial risk that the company may default. Of course, that lines up with credit risk, downgrade risk. There's liquidity and marketability risk. This is an issue in real estate, of course, where, hey, if I invest 100% of my money in real estate, I got to sell that house to get my money back. I can't peel off the bathroom to get a few bucks to.
Yeah. And the whole idea with the real estate component of it, of saying, well, I can just go get a loan. It's like, maybe, maybe, again, hearing noises of banks who are not super excited about lending 70% on your rental property right now.
Speaking of real estate, time for our TikTok minute. This is where we dive into either a TikTok or an Instagram reel where a creator is shining a light on something either fantastic or quote fantastic. This woman may need to find some more real estate to live because, well, let's listen in. This is when you want to have a good emergency fund or cash flow to go move someplace else.
My boyfriend's toilet, so I took the poop out and put it in his cat's litter box. Then he asked if I pooped in it, and I said no, but he said his cat has been dead for a week. Please pick me up.
That's a bad day. That is a bad, bad day.
Please come pick me up.
Cat's been dead. All she really needs is a bag and a stick. It's really, really what she needs.
Oh boy.
Coming up next, Nate and Kaylee Klemp were both successful in their careers consulting for high power companies around the world, but everything was going south because they'd come home at night and they'd end up fighting. They had a heck of a time, like a lot of couples do, getting on the same page. I know Cheryl and I had to go through this, and I know a lot of couples go through, you know what, how's this relationship really going to work? For us, it was when our kids went to college. For other people, it's maybe the 6-7 year mark. Some people, it's right when they first move in together. But even if you're not married, just in any relationship, how do you make that relationship work? Nate and Kaylee going to talk to us about that. But first, Doug is here. Let's do some trivia.
Hey there, stackers. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. Listen, Joe's mom loves a good mani-pedi, but the last time they overcharged her because of her goat feet. If you've ever seen Dumb and Dumber, you get the picture. What? No. I said show feet. Show feet. Beautiful, beautiful feet. Yeah. Okay, I want to talk about it. They're so hideous. Look, I don't really get the whole mani-pedi thing, but when I used to take Joe's mom in, there were lots of people in line. So I said to myself, let's make some money and help this lady out. I did a little bit of digging, and get this. The national annual spending on nail services is $8 $1 billion. So my question is, how much does the average person who gets mani-pedis regularly spend per year? Is it $550, $1,050, or $1,350 a year?
I'll be right there, Ma.
Geez, you go think about the answer, and I'll be right back after I help Joe's mom put those rose-colored beauties under a fan for a few minutes. Sure, I'm going to go throw up, but they'll also make a quick 20 bucks.
We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing. But they can also be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. Oh, God. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right. U.S. Cellular, a company that sells phones, wants us to put down our phones and to see what we find. Learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Hey there, stackers. I'm Mr. Fancy Fingers and massage chair resident, Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. I'm thinking of expanding this mani-pedi biz way beyond Joe's mom. The market for this is huge. Even assistant manager Todd down at the Sizzler sure could use a treatment. His nails look like part of the shrimp appetizer, and not in a good way. I mean, we are serious about nail culture in this country. Lil' Kim wore nails made of real dollar bills that ended up in the Museum of Modern Art. But it ain't cheap. According to Wise Bread, the average manicure is $19.50, and the average pedicure is $32.25. Probably that extra upcharge is for the stink factor, don't you think? The average person who gets manis and pedis done does so every 2 weeks, spending an average of about $1,350 per year. And now, to help us figure out how to paint that cost into a happy marriage, it's Nate and Kaylee Klimp.
And here they are coming down to the basement. Look at this couple. Nate and Kaylee Klimp are here. How are you?
Great. Nice to see you.
Well, so good to be here in the basement.
Great to have you. I'm super excited that we get to talk about relationships because, well, let's actually start off with the story of your relationship. And it begins, my wife and I are both runners. And I think your marital story kind of starts in the book where mine and Cheryl's is with stinky tennis shoes. Who had some stinky tennis shoes?
I was the one with the stinky tennis shoes. And this was when we first moved in together, now 19 years ago. I had this habit where I would walk in the house, I would kick off my shoes, they would tumble somewhere in front of the doorway. And this was like, you know, when we're first learning how to live together. And for Kaylee, this was so irritating. And so the start of the book and the start of our story really is one day Kaylee decided to hide my running shoes in one of those like hidden cupboards above the refrigerator that nobody uses. And that was one of our first major blowups when we had first moved in together. And what we realized is, like all of our fights, this was a fight about fairness. It wasn't fair that I was leaving my shoes. To me, it wasn't fair that I couldn't just do whatever I wanted the way I used to when I was single.
Well, and it's funny because that fairness fight, Kaylee, that also was a fight the two of you had around spending time with family at the holidays.
Absolutely. That was one of our most explosive fights. That somehow in our mind's eye, we should spend exactly equal time with each set of parents. And so we were living away. Both of our families were in Colorado. We would spend Christmas Eve and Christmas Day with Nate's parents. And then we would spend the 26th, 27th, and 28th with my family. They got a bonus day because Nate's parents got the actual holiday. And the amount of tension that would occur around, were we leaving at 6 p.m. so that we could say hello and good night to everyone before we went to sleep? Or were we leaving at 8 p.m. and just seeing people in the morning? you would have thought we were fighting about something substantial. And instead, we were just fighting about fairness.
Well, and the one that you mentioned then really was the difficult one then was about who is going to pick up your daughter after school. Like this was where it really started to come unwrapped, which, by the way, I felt this a lot because Cheryl and I had so many discussions about fairness and who was going to do things. And Nate, when you were talking about fairness, about picking up your daughter, you had the same argument that I had with Cheryl, which was, hey, just because I stay at home and I work from home all day does not mean that my life doesn't matter, which is exactly what I thought. So I kind of laughed, not because it was funny, but because Cheryl and I had the same exact thought.
Well, that's exactly right. Here we were, we now had a child. And what we found is that once you add a child or two or three into the picture, this fairness fight can become even more explosive. It's like turning up the volume on it. And you're exactly right. We all of a sudden had to figure out who's going to pick our daughter up. I was a writer. I had a more flexible schedule. Kaylee was asking, hey, can you do this a few times a week? And for me, this wasn't at all about picking up our daughter. This was about control and autonomy and freedom and not being respected. And that's what's so interesting about these conflicts in relationships and marriage is that on the surface, what it seems like it's about is never what it's actually about. There's always multiple layers. And at the very bottom of all these layers, we found there was this fundamental feeling of not being respected and that things just weren't fair for us.
And Kayla, you guys make a good point here early on too, that social media just makes it worse.
I think comparing your real life to someone else's curated life on social media makes it look and feel like everyone else has got it together. Everyone else is living in marital bliss. And then you come off your feed and recognize, huh, that is not how it feels in my life. And it makes everything feel even worse. It also makes things more difficult because finding quality time with your partner becomes an even more valuable and even more difficult pursuit because our phones are always tempting us right there in our pockets.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm looking at somebody else's life, which is awesome, besides spending time in my life that I think now is suboptimal versus all my amazing, amazing friends. But there's this big idea that you've already broached a couple times, which is this idea, I think, of fairness is really ruining relationships. And you do a great job at the beginning of the book of explaining something I thought we'd peel off today, which is how we got here. How did we get to this fairness idea? And you start off with where we were, which was this 80-20 relationship. Tell me, guys, about the 80-20 relationship of yesterday.
So if you go back in time, think 1950s, Pleasantville, the way that relationships were set up is where one person was contributing 80% to the relationship. They were in charge of making sure that the couple was connected, that the home was running smoothly, and the other person got to be a little bit of a free rider. Now, traditionally in the 1950s setup, it was the woman who was in charge of the family and the house and the relationship, and the man got to show up and maybe get some slippers and a cocktail at the end of the day. What's interesting about this is when I was talking to my own mom about when she was graduating from high school, she said, Kaylee, there weren't that many choices for me. My options when I was graduating were I could go be a teacher, I could go be a secretary, she's like, and I could go be a nurse. And there wasn't something so compelling outside the home that if I had the option, I would necessarily want to go pursue that. And so as we look backward, we can say, wow, that was wildly unfair. That the way that things were set up around expectations and gender norms, that was not the way that we would necessarily in our present day mindset look back and say, we want to set this up. But before we get too, I don't know, arrogant about it, it is worth looking back to remember there was a piece of the 80-20 setup that was beneficial, which is that both partners were aligned as a team. That both people wanted the other person to be successful in their world because that partnership was essential. They couldn't kind of split off and do their own thing in an easy way. So as we look back, 80-20, one person's 80% responsible, one person's only 20%. You get to be a free rider. wildly unfair and yet point in the same direction.
You know, and it's funny, you both mentioned guidebooks from that era, and reading some of these first guides are great. Like for the husband's part, your wife wants to be treated as a sweetheart always. Well, yes, absolutely.
Great advice.
Yes.
Good advice.
Don't be stingy with money. Be a generous provider. That makes sense to me.
Awesome.
Yep. Compliment her new dress. Okay. Maybe a little, you know, on the sexist side, but compliment about how they look. And then always greet her with a kiss, especially, by the way, when other people are around. that one is a little weird. But then it gets twisted. Like, so far, it's so good. Then we have the advice for her to her man, and this goes off the rails.
Absolutely. That second piece where they're the sort of like things that wives should, the commandments for wives, I think is what they call it. You start to see the full unequal nature of the 80-20 model in play on full display there. You know, there are things like your husband's needs are, you should always be put before your needs. Your needs will feel trivial in comparison to your husband's. And this is all coming out of the same guidebook, right? But you can just see the difference between how these land in our current age.
Yeah. Listen to his concerns. They're more important than yours. I was like, wow, maybe not. Which led us, by the way, to this idea of, okay, I can see why this doesn't make sense. So this leads us to where you say that a lot of people are today and where you had your struggles, which is this 50-50 model. And Kaylee, there was a woman, Alex Kate Schulman, who you say really is responsible for a lot of this 50-50 model. Tell us about Alex.
Actually, I can take this one if that's okay.
No,
Alex Kate Schulman.
No, I'm kidding. I'm joking. Yes, please take it.
So, Nate just spent so much more time with Alex. She was incredible to hear about, and Nate got to spend more quality time with her.
Yeah, this is an amazing woman. She was a feminist in the early 1970s, and she wrote a book called The Marriage Agreement. And it was basically like one of the first marriage books or documents that argued explicitly for this idea of fairness. And what I love about The Marriage Agreement is it's so over the top in trying to make things fair that it actually ends up illustrating the problems with this model, because it ends up being this elaborate scorecard, essentially, of, you know, husband does daycare pickups on Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. Wife does them on Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday. And then it has, you know, certain rules for if you have a fairness debt to pay down and your partner has done more, then you have to repay your fairness debt by doing various actions on the weekend. So it's an amazing document. And to her credit, this was revolutionary at the time. You know, it was really kind of a feminist manifesto of sorts. But looking back, it actually becomes very useful for us to illustrate why this model of constantly keeping score drives all of us crazy in relationships and marriages.
Because it ends up with how much time are we spending in the holidays with Kaylee's family versus Nate? Whose responsibility is it to pick up the tennis shoes?
Exactly. And the real problem here is that one of the things we found out through researching this book is that in the field of psychology, they've discovered that our assessments of what is or isn't fair are clouded by all sorts of cognitive biases, such that we are not looking at the same data when we're arguing about this. So, you know, there's availability bias, which is basically a fancy way of saying, like, all of my wonderful contributions and acts in our relationship are available to me. But when it comes to what Kaylee does, I really only see a part of it, maybe half of it, maybe even less. So I tend to systematically underestimate what she does. But then another bias is this overestimation bias, where they found that when it comes to daycare and household work, we radically overestimate the amount of time we spend doing things. You know, so you say, oh, I was cleaning the kitchen for 90 minutes. It was probably more like 20, 60 minutes, right? Maybe even 30, maybe even 20, right? And so all that's to say, like, that starts to show why we can never win this argument, or why this argument can never end. You know, we're arguing from the basis of really bad data and pure delusion.
But I even like, Nate, the fact that you bring up it also, instead of the two of us being this unit, which is why we decided to be together in the first place, instead of being a unit, we're now kind of on separate teams, and we're making sure that I get mine.
Exactly. You can almost think about it like basketball. a really good team in basketball is a team where it doesn't matter if you make the assist or if you make the basket. But if you look at like the All-Star game, for example, where you've got all these hot shots who are amazing and they're hogging the ball, it just actually doesn't work out very well for the team as a whole. And I think a lot of couples in this new generation are like NBA All-Stars in the sense that they're focused primarily on their own individual success, and any encroachments that their partner might have on that become a threat to them. And so you get a very different kind of relationship, which isn't really about love and connection. It's more about protecting your turf.
It's interesting then, obviously, to make sure that we're on the same team and we are playing a team game. And I like that basketball analogy. This idea of 80-80, Kaylee, lead us here. What's 80-80 then? If it's not 50-50 and it's not 80-20, what's 80-80 look like?
Starting with 50-50 as the foil, where everything is striving to be perfectly equally fair, 80-80 is where both partners are striving to contribute 80%. Both people are trying to contribute, to appreciate, to have a mindset of radical generosity. And in some ways, I think it's really powerful to look at the progression that once upon a time, and you were just describing it in your relationship, 50-50 was the closest we could get to trying to be equals and in love. The problem is it was a really clunky technology. And so in all the scorekeeping, in all of the competition, we lost the thread of why we're in this together. So in 80-80, there's actually two different pieces. We start with the mindset. Can I strive to contribute 80%? And then we build on top of it a structure. How can we set up our values, our priorities, our roles, so that we win as a team, so that it feels like shared success?
Why not then, Kaylee, though? Why not 100-100? I mean, I know there's so many people like listening to us going, why 80-80? Why hold back 20?
I love that you asked this question because we considered it. And many people in our interviews, we interviewed about 100 couples, said, well, if we're going to go all in, let's go all in. Let's make it 100-100. And the reason we don't advocate for that is because we found individual pursuits are also still important. Having some things that you are after and are motivated by that are just for you, keeping sort of that side stash of 20% allows it to feel like you still have autonomy, you still have freedom, and you can come to the relationship as a full participant in the couple rather than feeling like your identity actually just got submerged by the couple.
Getting to this 80-80 idea then, Nate, is it mindset? Is it tactics? Is it a combination of both? Like, where do we begin when we're searching for this new reality?
We like to say that the starting point is really about mindset, because if you don't have a mindset of radical generosity, you can do all sorts of practices around roles and balancing power, but there's still going to be this undercurrent of resentment at play. So when it comes to that mindset of 80-80, you can actually start to break it down into very tactical pieces and micro habits. So for example, just doing one radically generous act of contribution for your partner each day goes a long way to building this sort of broader atmosphere of radical generosity. Or one of our favorites, at the end of each day, before we go to bed, we each give each other one appreciation. It takes about 30 seconds. You know, it's very easy to do, and yet it's a way of just bringing back that spirit of radical generosity and appreciation. So there are things like that we can do that are very tactical, very easy to do, don't take much time. We just have to remember to do it and build them as habits.
It seems like, Kaylee, also there's got to be some time spent on shared goal setting, I would think.
Indeed. One of the places that we really encourage couples to start is to take a step back from your life and get clear on what are the goals that we want to accomplish as a couple. And we start with values. And so many people will say, oh, I know my values. And then you ask them to talk about them and they get a little stuck. And so being really intentional, being explicit as a couple or as a family helps you create a true north. What I thought was really interesting in our interviews is that there's not a single set of values that are the quote unquote right set. That there were some couples that we interviewed who said, hey, our values for this chapter of our life. And as an aside, we really think about life occurring in chapters, that there might be a chapter where your kids are young and the focus and the values are around education or are about sort of establishing cohesion as a group. And there might be a chapter in your life where you're empty nesters, and that chapter might be devoted to philanthropy or giving back. For the couple to get really clear, what is this chapter about? How will we know that we've won together as a couple and as a family? Again, one of my favorite stories in this was we interviewed a couple called the Honey Trekkers, and their value was about adventure and freedom. And they set up their whole life where they lived in a van, traveled around the world, and had experiences. According to their values, their true north, they were winning as a couple. I'm presently in San Francisco working with some tech companies. I don't think that the executives working at these companies necessarily share that value set. They wouldn't say that living in a van was winning according to their values.
Down by the river, right?
Exactly. Down by the river. Literally down by the river. And so we want to create some space for you get to define your values from the infinite set, but alignment there really matters.
And this sounds like a big piece of that. We talked tactics is setting the time aside, because we talked earlier about couples being busy and some of us are parents, or even if we're not parents, you talk about tech executives going crazy on time. I'm imagining there's got to be some structure. Is there a weekly meeting that you like? Is it a monthly get together? How does it kind of work from that standpoint?
We think about structure on that score, breaking down into three different categories. So the first is at the micro level, having some time together where you can just connect every week is super important. So this could be a date night. We're actually huge fans of the date hike, but having some time where you're together, hopefully without devices, that's key. But then also potentially having some time where you're having a family meeting or a family check-in where you can go over calendars and you can go over logistics. That's really important because you want to disentangle those two. There's nothing worse than a date night where you spend the whole time going through Excel spreadsheets.
Yes, absolutely.
Not very sexy, very interesting. And so those are the first two. But then the third one is really having maybe quarterly, maybe more often, if that's possible, some time where you can spend a long amount of time together, maybe a day together, maybe it's a weekend together, and really take a step back from your life and think about where your values are headed or where you want to realign priorities, those sorts of things.
It is funny that you say that, Nate, because we will go to the company retreat when somebody else says we got to go to the company retreat, and we leave there. We're like, wow, that was great. Everybody's on the same page. And we never think about that crap for our family. Like, we don't think about it once.
It's so interesting to hear you say that, Joe, because in many respects, the structure piece of the 80-80 marriage mirrors some of the things that we take for granted in organizations, that it's hard to imagine an executive team not knowing the company values, or it's hard to imagine really any corporate team not knowing these are our priorities for this quarter or for this year, or not having role clarity on a team where you're stepping on each other's toes. Some of the basics that we do in our business lives, if we remember and build the habit in our personal lives, serve us really well, with the caveat, of course, that that conversation is predicated on a mindset of radical generosity. Because exactly as Nate was saying, if we're trying to divvy up our roles from a place of fairness, forget it.
If it's 50-50, it just becomes a nightmare. I just can't imagine being in that meeting. The book is called The 80-80 Marriage, A New Model for a Happier, Stronger Relationship. Available everywhere, I assume.
Everywhere. Absolutely.
Awesome. Kaylee, Nate, thanks for hanging out with us and helping us make better relationships for stackers everywhere. I really appreciate it.
Fun to be in the basement.
Thanks so much, Joe.
Hey, this is Pete the Planner, USA Today money columnist and host of the Ask Pete the Planner podcast. When I'm not fixing the weirdest financial situations you've ever heard of, I'm stacking Benjamins.
Big thanks to Nate and Kaylee for hanging out with us, OG. You know, this idea of giving 80%, you know, it can't be just 50-50, no matter what type of relationship it is. I know that they were talking marriage, but no matter what type of relationship it is, if you really want it to work, you can't be counting. It can't be quid pro quo. Hey, you haven't done anything for me lately, so I'm not doing anything for you. If you really want it to work, it's got to be 100% giving.
You both are giving.
80%. And then it's an 80-80 rule.
Did you, Mrs. OG, struggle with this?
That I'm always such the giver?
I was never implying that.
No, I mean, we have a really great roles and responsibilities where when she was working full time, it was a lot different. But now that she's not, you know, works at home with the kids, it's very, very traditional in the sense of like, I work, she handles the kids thing, but that it's not a diminishing activity, right? It's like, it's something that we agreed upon when she wanted to step away from her job. I said, okay, well, we're going to change our roles a little bit here. And this is what this is going to look like. And I think it works really great for us.
But I still feel like you guys go over and above. Like I've been with the two of you together and you guys have each other's back and help each other with that stuff. Like if one of you can't do something, you jump in.
Well, yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, I'm just been hanging around this gal for 25 years. So we got to kind of sort of figure it out.
She'll kick your ass if you don't.
That's also true.
That is true. Big thanks to Nate and Kaylee. You can just tell from their enthusiasm that they're a couple that's in it, you know, that they, yeah, they're great. Hey, let's roll with Haven Lifeline and tackle some of life's most important questions. Our friends at Haven Life Insurance Agency, OG, they put what you value first.
I am still detoxing from Easter candy and very much trying to fight the good fight of there's 6 weeks until the OG summer bod has to show up at the pool party. So, you know,
OG summer bod. What is that? Only 16 donut rolls instead of 15.
No, that's my point is that, you know, it's, I got to, you know,
okay, don't know.
A
don't
lot of
know
people
what
start
is.
This in January or February. I'm like, uh-oh.
See, I think the key to winning with detox, frankly, from Easter candy is just don't. I mean, just keep going. Like, you know, double down.
Don't detox, just tox.
Yeah, those little Cadbury eggs, just three a day, you know. The Reese's.
It's Reese's. There's been a long discussion about
this. It's Reese's.
It's definitely not.
It's Reese's. Yes.
You can do whatever you want.
Reese's. Who are you? Anyway, it's your loved ones and your time. Yeah. And a bunch of chocolate.
Or that.
That's why they've created a modern way to buy quality term life insurance. You go to stackybenjamins.com/havenlife now. You'll get your free quote and you'll find they have affordable prices. All policies issued by the parent company, Mass Mutual. Application easy to complete online, and they offer an instant coverage decision. Today, we're going to throw out the lifeline to our friend, Alex. Say hi, Alex.
Okay, guys, here's my question. If I buy an index fund today, let's say an S&P 500, and it's made up of the Googles and the Teslas of today, and I keep dollar cost averaging year after year, 20 years from now, that index is probably tracking some other future new companies. So when I start to eventually sell off, so you have purchase, when I eventually start to sell off, the index is now made up of different stuff. So what am I actually selling? Am I selling the original Google Tesla stuff? Am I selling the new fancy companies? Or is it something entirely different? Super confused. Thanks for the show, guys. Bye.
Oh, I love this idea, Alex. How do taxes work in mutual funds and exchange traded funds? And you know what, Alex, it's the same thing if you have an actively managed fund, because in an actively managed fund, you got the manager's buying and selling. You're not buying and selling. The manager is. So, OG, how do you pay taxes in ETFs and mutual funds?
Do you think that's what he's asking? It's the taxes?
That's what I thought.
Huh. Yeah. What did you think he was asking?
I thought
a much bigger, broader question of like, what is this crap that I'm buying and how does it change from being Googles and Teslas and Facebooks of 2022 to the 2042 version of Googles, Teslas and Facebooks, because some of those companies might not be around or
let's answer that one first, because that's a cool thing too. These things, Alex, are self-cleaning. And even if it's not for everybody, I like the fact that you can buy an index and it will clean itself.
Well, and that's one of the issues with individual stock purchasing, right? Is that you look at a stock today, and I used to know these stats, but you know, some number of equities that were available for purchase in 1980, just they don't exist. Those companies have been merged and sold and bankrupt and folded and, you know, all sorts of stuff. It's easy to look back and say, darn it, how come I didn't put $5,000 in Microsoft back in 1987? Surely my dad was smart enough to do that. And it's like, well, yeah, but the Microsoft of 1987 isn't the Microsoft of 2022, where you have, you know, 40 years of track record and you go, well, of course everybody uses a Windows computer. You know, it's the same thing with Apple. Like how did I not see Apple in 2003 when it was $1 a share? It was $1 a share. That's why you didn't see it, because you were like, nobody buys that crap from Apple. Look at the company. It's in the toilet. Nobody even wants to run the darn thing. They had to get the guy who started the thing to come back and run it because,
yes,
you know, nobody wanted to do it. This thing's a piece of garbage. Why do I want to buy a stock that's $1 a share? You know, so trying to identify that is so much luck at the front end, right? I mean, you hope that maybe you get one right every so often, but it's so difficult in real time to pick out what is the next Tesla, what is the next Google, what is the next, you know, whatever, 25, 30 years from now. So the easiest way to do that is to say, well, I'll just kind of sort of own one of everything and really focus on the things that matter from an investment standpoint, which are diversification and your allocation. So
well, instead of loading up, and like Nick Majuli said last week at the beginning, it's just putting more money in
and just dumping money in,
money in
100%. So if you can control the things that you can control, which are, what's my asset allocation look like? Am I putting in as much as I can fathom, you know, now, like Nick talked about, and then, you know, what is that diversification? So I'm not all Vanguard S&P 500, which is the sexy thing over the last 10 years. And make sure that you've got small companies and make sure you've got international companies and, you know, those sorts of things. Those are the things that you can control. And then inside of that, because they're index based or because they're asset allocation based, those managers, the people in charge of those products, have to make sure that they represent the thing that they're trying to emulate. So Google gets kicked out in 10 years from now because it's not a thing anymore. So be it. It'll get replaced by the next thing automatically. And there's nothing that you have to do with that. So
super,
it's a lot easier than trying to pick the stocks on your own.
And this is also why, if the economy continues, which is just the big if in the stock market, right? Not even a big if, it will continue.
If the economy continues, but come on now.
But this is no. This is this is the only, well, it's really the only, we talked about risk earlier. It's the only risk that you're taking when you buy an index fund. Because what is your true risk over long periods of time? Your true risk is that this thing that we've built, this engine, is going to fail. If the engine's going to continue, a great place to be is an index fund, because of the fact that you're always going to own maybe not the best companies, but you're going to own companies that are rocking in this particular environment. Whatever that environment is, and indexes have a tendency to go up because of that reason. Just have a tendency to go up. If a stock is going down, that means that it's going to be worth less, which means it's going to get dumped. So
yeah,
it is a bias toward going up. Now, that brings up the question I thought you was asking, which was about taxes. Like if you start off owning Google and then Google's not a thing 30 years from now, when do you pay tax on this stuff? Because Google went up for a while and then, you know, they dump it out of the index. Like how does that work?
Well, in a mutual fund that's an index-based product or any type of mutual fund, when a manager buys or sells, they kind of accumulate all that and then distribute the gains or losses according to the amount of shares that you owned. So, you know, again, at a big scale, you might own 1 million shares of Google. Your percentage of that is relatively small. And then when the sale happens, they keep track of all of that and send you a 1099 every year for capital gains, either gains or losses. If they have losses, they accumulate them to kind of help offset the gains. In an ETF, it's a little bit different, although some of that's similar. It's a little bit different in that they can swap things out, which make it a little bit more tax efficient. So they might say, well, I'm going to swap out that Google for this thing, and therefore that's not going to generate any taxable, you know, impact to you. If all of your investing is done in a retirement plan, none of this even matters. So it really only matters in a
in a non-retirement account. But ETFs are slightly more tax efficient than mutual funds of the same variety. You know, an index mutual fund versus an index ETF. The index ETF is going to be slightly more tax efficient. Again, if it's in your workplace 401k or it's in your IRA,
who cares?
Doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yeah. I hope we answer your question, Alex. Thanks for the question. And by the way, for being brave, Gertrude is sending him some sweet Stacky Benjamin swag. The Haven Lifeline Greatest Money Show on Earth t-shirt for calling in and asking a question. By the way, if you've got a question, stackybenjamins.com/voicemail. And you too can have some swag. I love as I'm going around the country seeing all the stackers with their just amazing Stacky Benjamin stuff on. Very sexy. Those people look incredibly sexy, OG. It's like they walk in the door and everybody's like, that's a shooter. That is somebody that knows what's what.
That You're person. Too sexy for your clothes.
Way too sexy. Yeah. But keep wearing them, please. Don't come to our events without the clothes. Just would turn into a whole different event. We don't, we like attention, but not that type of attention. Hey, we've got lots of fun stuff happening as I go around the country. You know what? I am in Minneapolis tonight. And then tomorrow, I am in Madison, Wisconsin to get those exact locations, stackybenjamins.com/stacked, and come join us. And then, by the way, I've got a nice little almost 3-week break, OG, before we are in Northwest Arkansas. We'll be in Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Is it really a break though for you?
Kind of.
I know you want to tell everybody.
Kind of depends on what you think of the word break. Maybe I'll share what's going on with everybody after that. Okay. But the 19th, I will be in Northwest Arkansas. Our friends at Acre Trade are helping us put that together. Thank you so much. And then on the 21st in Little Rock, our good friend and writer, Sarah Catherine Gutierrez, helping us with that one. And both of those going to be big. Arkansas is taking care of us, OG, which is really cool. Just a beautiful state, as you know, and some really fun people. And it's great that
I fly over it all the time. And I noticed the topography. In fact, the last time that I was flying, it was so cloudy that you could see the rolling hills made by the mountains.
Yeah.
They're hills, right? But you could see the cloud formations ebb and flow with the topography
like
below,
the ripple.
Cool.
You got like a ripple effect. That's cool.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. Yeah.
So come join us wherever we are. By the way, if you're not here for surround sound, if you're here because you need to get things done, step one is to make your team better. OG and his team are accepting new clients. So to get on their calendar, it's stackybenjamins.com/OG. And that will lead you to the link to thinking bigger about your goals. All right. That's going to do it for today. What a great episode, OG. Thanks to everybody for hanging out with us. Doug, you got it from here, man. What should we have learned today?
So what should we have learned today? First, take some advice from Nate and Kaylee Klemp. Want better relationships? Keep your eye on giving as much as possible. By giving, you'll find more happiness than in either an 80-20 relationship or even a 50-50 relationship. When both participants participate 80-80, great things happen. Second, safe investments? The times are a-changing quickly. It's a great time to ask if your asset allocation is right for you and if there might be new opportunities or risks you haven't taken into account. But the big lesson... Don't ask Joe's mom who painted her toenails brown earlier because, well, just don't. I mean, she's all itchy and scratchy over that one. That'll teach her to fall asleep while making me get up close and personal with those nasties. Thanks so much to Nate and Kaylee Klemp for joining us today. Their book, The 80-80 Marriage, is available wherever books are sold. This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC, copyright 2022, and is created by Josal Sehi. Our producer is Karen Repine. The show is written by the brilliant Paulette Perhatch, with help from Joe, me, and Doc G from the Earn and Invest podcast. After you listen to our show, check out the 201 Deep Dives, written by our website manager and blog editor, Brooke Miller. You'll find the 411 on all things money at the 201. Just go to stackingbenjamins.com/201. Once we bottle up all this goodness, we ship it to our engineer, the amazing Steve Stewart. Steve helps the rest of our team sound nearly as good as I do right now. Want to chat with friends about the show later? Mom's friend Gertrude is our social media coordinator and the room mother in our Facebook group called The Basement. So, say hello when you see us posting online. Here's a weird fact. Both she and Tina Eichenberg are never in the same room at the same time. To join all the basement fun with other stackers, type stackingbenjamins.com/basement. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and we'll see you next time back here at the Stacking Benjamin Show. Not only should you not take advice from these dorks, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any financial decisions, speak with a real financial advisor.
Went and saw a movie, OG. Went and saw a flick.
A film.
Got myself some buttered popcorn.
On my recommendation, did you do this yesterday? Like I told you to?
Cost me $87 for the popcorn.
Movie Pass is coming back though, so you
can do that. So that'll save everything. I haven't even looked into the new Movie Pass. Have you?
No, not at all.
Yeah, can't do it. Of course. Well, I'm traveling so much right now that it doesn't really matter. I'm not seeing movies as much as I used to. And you know what? Generally, the thing that frustrates me about movies lately is, hey, you can go see any superhero movie you want at the theater. And that's pretty much it. Kids movie, superhero movie, dumb horror movie. That's pretty much it. And excuse the word dumb on horror movie, but I haven't seen a good horror movie in a long time. So imagine when I saw the trailer for this film that I'd never even heard of. I love it when I find a film I've never heard anything about. And while I'm on the road, I'm like, you know what? I just need 2 hours in the theater by myself. And it was so cool. This is Everything, Everywhere, All at Once.
Mrs. Wang, are you with us?
I am paying attention.
Now, you may only see a pile of receipts, but I see a story. I can see where this story is going. It does not look good.
And Mrs. Wang gets transported right there. But the woman who's telling her, I see a story and the story doesn't look good. That's Jamie Lee Curtis. And guess who she is, OG? She's an IRS agent. And she is meeting with Mrs. Wang because there seem to be some discrepancies about her taxes, and she and her family and their small laundromat are being investigated. They're being audited, and it's not going well. By the way, the role of Mrs. Yang
is Jamie Lee Curtis.
That is Jamie Lee Curtis. And when you see her in this role, she has a kind of like somebody put the cereal bowl on her head and cut around it haircut. And she looks very, I don't know, frumpy and not very happy. I was surprised. I had to look three times because once again, I knew nothing about this movie before I saw it. I just saw this weird trailer and I saw this woman. And then halfway through the movie, I'm like, she looks so familiar. And then you realize it's Jamie Lee Curtis. Haven't seen Jamie Lee Curtis, by the way. And the woman that plays Mrs. Wang is also another badass, Michelle Yeoh. And if you don't know that name, she was in the James Bond film Tomorrow Never Dies, which was a good James Bond film. But I tell you what I liked her even better in, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. And if you haven't seen Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, boy, what a great movie. That was you would really like this movie, OG. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon spirituality, martial arts, stuff blowing up, bad guys, good action film, but with a lot of spirit. You know, it is just, it's a fantastic film, and she is the star of that movie. But this one, she's at the IRS building meeting with Jamie Lee Curtis. And all of a sudden in the middle of this, she's transported, and she's transported into another world, kind of, but she keeps coming back between worlds, and there's a bunch of strange stuff going on, and she's in so many fights, and there's so many this is a martial arts movie, but it's not really a martial arts movie. It's a movie about family and about your life. You might think your life is boring, but your life might not be as boring as you think it is. Your life might be a lot more exciting, or maybe boring is good. Maybe that's the takeaway. I would love, once people see this movie, to have more of a discussion about it, because man, was I a fan of this film. It is weird. There were several times where it got slow and I thought that I might want to leave the movie, or I thought it was done. In fact, about halfway through the movie, some credits start rolling, and then you realize credits are rolling in the movie for another movie, but they don't present it that way. So it is surreal. It is weird. You got to be ready for a really weird, weird, weird movie. But I left there with my heart full and thinking what a ride it was. Everything, everywhere, all at once. If you're up for a very strange take, a lot like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, a lot going on, I would wholeheartedly endorse it. Big, big thumbs up for this movie.
All right, maybe I'll check it out in my free time.
Oh, gee, I can't figure out why they haven't left yet. Why haven't they left yet?
Who's supposed to be leaving?
Isn't everybody supposed to leave? Let's get on to the next episode.
They don't have to really race out right away, do they? I mean, the next episode's not for like two more days, so.
No, that is true. So
kind of lollygag.
Well, if they're here for more, why don't we give them more?
Is there overtime pay? I just want to clarify roles and responsibilities here before I commit.
How about this? You just hang out and I'll do this thing in front of me. What do you think?
You want me to supervise?
Yes.
I am excellent at supervising.
Tell me what you think about this.
Okay, go ahead. You do it.
You know, when you hear the name Navy Federal Credit Union, you probably think
a little bit more, a little more pop, you know, a little more pop.
When you hear the name Navy Federal Credit Union.
Now do it with that energy. I love it.
When you hear the name Navy Federal.
I stepped on you. Try one more time.
When you hear the name Navy Federal Credit Union, you probably think that it's just for members of the U.S. Navy. In fact, Navy Federal Credit Union serves all branches of the armed forces. They even serve branches. Nope, they don't serve branches. They even serve families of service members and veterans of all branches. How come you didn't stop me when I did that?
I don't have a copy in front of me, but you were doing great. I just wouldn't let you get through it.
Well, they're experts, OG, in military finances. They empathize with members' lives and go above and beyond to make sure they don't miss out on financial opportunities. I mean, think about the number of times that my family has had to make a call to Navy Federal Credit Union, or they're at the credit union because they have a branch there. But you know what? You don't need branches where you are, because their online presence is
online app.
Yeah,
is amazing.
So good. Wherever you're at, Navy Federal is there to help, especially like when it comes to buying a car. They know it's a big investment. And if you can't pay cash and you need a loan for your car, well, they offer rates as low as 1.79% APR on new vehicles, along with flexibility with monthly payments and terms. And now when you refinance your auto loans from another lender, members could save and get $100 plus another $100 for $200. So you could save and get $200.
That's what they call stacking some Benjamins.
Get decisions in seconds and start saving with Navy Federal Credit Union, available to members who are active duty, veterans, or members of their family. To earn and save more as a member, learn more at NavyFederal.org. That's NavyFederal.org. And we'll end on this one. This is like the big crescendo, right? The big to-do at the end. Navy Federal is federally insured by NCUA. Credit and collateral subject to approval. Rates subject to change and based on creditworthiness, so your rate may differ. Refinance loans must be at least $5,000 to be eligible for the $200. Ready for the big end? Terms and conditions apply. How about that?
Excellent. You did a great job.
Well, this show's over, Stackers, but you know what? It's Military Appreciation Month, and that means that we've got time still for a shout out to members of our community, members of our family who have served our country. And you know what? Today, I want to give a shout out to two of my uncles, my Uncle Henry, who is in the Army. Let's do three. My Uncle Eddie, who is in the Army, and my Uncle Bill, also in the Army. And two of them served in Vietnam. One served in Korea. And a big thanks to all three of my uncles, my dad's brothers, who served like he did in the military. And this Military Appreciation Month, Navy Federal Credit Union wants to celebrate not just my uncles, but they want to celebrate their members who go above and beyond. Navy Federal offers member-only exclusive rates, discounts, and tools to empower their members and help them reach their goals. Of course, you may be eligible for Navy Federal membership and you don't even know it because it's open to all branches of the military, veterans, DOD employees, and their families. They're all eligible, and I want to reiterate, and their families. If you have family, like I do, who served in the military, well, then you're eligible for Navy Federal membership. Navy Federal's employees are part of the community they serve, and many of them are military family members, reservists, or veterans. Here during Military Appreciation Month, Stackers, go visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate, and you're going to see all of Navy Federal's Military Appreciation Month offers. So many cool things they're doing for veterans. You'll also see all their other awesome 24/7, 12 months of the year offers. That's NavyFederal.org/celebrate. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.